I'm Luna Tang.
I'm Dwayne Paris.
This is CloppTech Publishing Radio.
Here we talk about what's happening in the publishing industry today, share stories from publishers, and discuss how we can shape the future of publishing.
CloppTech Publishing Radio is brought to you by CloppTech.
The interesting thing about book fairs is that whoever attends a book fair only ever really looks at it through the prism of what they want to get out of it, because that is human nature.
Today, we are honored to have Jax Thomas with us to talk about book fairs.
Jax Thomas is currently guest director at Bologna Book Plus, a brand extension of the acclaimed Bologna Children's Book Fair. Jax was director of the London Book Fair from 2013 to 2020. She began her career at the BBC before moving into publishing, where roles included Simon & Schuster, Michael Joseph of Penguin, and HarperCollins. She was a partner and CEO at Midas Public Relations, following a six-year tenure as European Director of Communications, Reader's Digest. Jax co-founded the Chiswick Book Festival and serves on several committees. She is a regular speaker about publishing at leading universities in the UK and abroad.
Welcome to our show, Jax.
Thank you very much indeed. Delighted to be here.
It's great having you in this episode. The first question we'd like to ask is, as you have had a long career path in public relations and publishing, including work experience at a PR agency, Reader's Digest, the director of London Book Fair, and now the guest director of Bologna Book Plus at the Bologna Fair, could you tell us what brought you to where you are today?
Well, I think a variety of events, none of which was pre-planned, which I think is possibly quite a reflection of me, really. I went to university, I read French, and in actual fact, speaking French and being in France is what remains one of the great loves of my life. When I graduated, I had a place at law school and I had a place at teacher training college. And I think it shows an enormous lack of imagination that I was the daughter of a teacher and a lawyer. So I had obviously thought that I should follow in one of the footsteps in the footsteps of one of my parents. Anyhow, a number of events sort of brought me to the conclusion that in actual fact, I wanted to buy myself some time and have a year of doing something else. So I did at the time that I graduated from university, it was the age-old way of getting into the creative industries. I did a typing course, and I should think that anybody watching me type would think that I should have got my money back. But anyway, I did a typing course, and as a result of which I got my first job at the BBC, and that was writing copy for internal adverts and things for the radio. And I liked that environment so much. I felt completely at home in the sort of the arts and creative world. So I then decided that I would make a conscious effort to find out what book publishing was all about. And so from there I went on, and I was extremely lucky, and I got a job at Blackie Children's Books. And then from then on, I knew that I had landed in an environment that I liked and wanted to continue in. And then the publication of J.G. Ballard's Empire of the Sun was up for the Booker Prize that year. And I got so excited about the entire sort of hullabaloo around the book and the book itself. And I decided I wanted to work at the publisher that published J.G. Ballard. So I went to Victor Gallant's, and from then on I stayed in publishing for quite a few years, and then moved on and sort of really specialised in marketing and public relations and work with brands, really, which is what took me to Reader's Digest, because I wanted to have quite a big global canvas to be able to work around brands and brand development, and Reader's Digest sort of sitting alongside publishing at that time was a good place to do that. And it took me to working in America, which was a brilliant privilege. And I learned, I think I really, really, in career terms, grew up in that time. Then when I came back from Reader's Digest, I took over a job that looked after all of Europe, so a lot of pan-European campaigns. I learned a lot about culture change, change management. And then I decided I wanted to put it into practice in really having a part of my own business. So I joined two of the founding partners at Midas Public Relations, Stephen Williams and Tony Mullican, and became joint CEO. And we really developed Midas PR. It's a top 50 PR agency. We really developed it into lots of different and new directions. And that was enormous, great fun. It was so rewarding. And it included the downturn of 2008. And I still say to this day that one of my proudest career moments is not making one person redundant during that time. But it was a very, very stressful time to be running your own business with a salary bill for 30 people. And then one of our clients was the London Book Fair. And I think not very imaginatively, I was asked to go, and a vacancy came up for the role of director, and I was asked if I would do it. And it seemed like an interesting challenge because it had a lot of things that needed to be looked at, not least changing location, which always requires a big industry-wide consultation. So there were some interesting challenges, and I decided I was ready for a change. So that's what took me to the London Book Fair.
I was just going to say, so after, you know, 7 years at the London Book Fair, where we really, really took it into so many interesting directions and made it truly international and did a lot of interesting work with lots of interesting bodies. We set up a charity of the year, which had never been there before. We really developed the author program, the self-publishing programs, the inclusivity agenda, translation. We really did a huge amount of interesting work. And after 7 years, I really felt I do seem to have a pattern of leaving places after 7 years. And after 7 years, I decided I was new. I wanted to go back, back into sort of more of a sort of diversity of work and also work for myself possibly and have a bit more flexibility. So, and I knew that I was leaving the London Book Fair in fantastically good hands, and I'm sure it will continue to go from strength to strength, and I'm looking forward to following it if we ever get out of pandemic times and get back to anything that I don't know what normal is anymore.
I don't think any of us do. You mentioned working with brands and developing brands, and specifically with the London Book Fair, along with the other initiatives that you took on. One of it was moving from a larger facility in Earl's Court to something a bit smaller in Olympia. What was the driving force behind that move?
Oh, well, there was very little choice in that because, unfortunately, Earl's Court, which was a very, very popular and iconic historic venue, was being demolished. It had been sold for redevelopment. And in actual fact, the owners of Earl's Court also owned Olympia. But it brought it so that made life easier in a way, and they were incredibly accommodating of all our needs. The London Book Fair was the only event that Olympia had that took every single square centimetre or inch, depending which country you're talking about, right. of the venue. But obviously we had to give the industry the choice because there was another exhibition venue, Excel, which is currently a Nightingale Hospital over in a very trendy area of London, over in the East End, really Canary Wharf. So we undertook the most massive consultation program, working with our advisory board colleagues and key customers, etc., and took everybody on. And they were kind enough to give us their time. You know, publishers were extremely assiduous about that, taking us so we took people on boats and trains and all sorts of things, you know, boats, trains and cable
cars to look at Excel and also to look at Olympia and to put forward lots of different plans. And so that took quite a long time. And in the end, I'm sure the right decision was made in that Olympia was a very happy home for the London Book Fair for the following 6 years. So, and now Olympia is undergoing its own redevelopment, and it's going to be an extremely exciting arts and cultural space at the end of it. So, yeah, it was that was the reason. It was as simple as, and when you go Bulls Court now, there is nothing left. Mm-hmm. It was a good job we moved. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is definitely fascinating, and I am totally fascinated with your story and your career journey. When I was reading some reports about your career journey, that I found one of the initiatives you took on as director was diversity in publishing. Why is this so important to you?
I've always been interested in ensuring that there's certainly, in as far as you can influence anything within your own sphere, that you have a diverse and inclusive team. And I think that's because we do live in a multicultural hub. We're very privileged to do that in London. And then publishing itself was undergoing taking a lot of initiatives around inclusivity and diversity, mm-hmm. which is fantastic. And of course, everyone who reads something should be able to identify with it and have access to it in a very comfortable way. You know, I've always wanted bookshops to be very welcoming of absolutely everybody, that it shouldn't be like going to the school library. You know, it should be fun as well as interesting and inspiring. So the time seemed to be right for me in 2016, that there was a huge amount of fantastic work going on in the publishing industry. And to be able to bring all those strands together and get people talking about the inclusivity agenda, I felt would not only inspire everyone to do even more, but also, in a way, get more pledges to do more. And in fact, in that first conference, in the first year, we did actually invite pledges and we published them and tried to sort of say to people, right, well, we're going to meet again in a year's time and we're going to have a look to see where we got with those. And I think for the most part, all of those pledges were delivered and more. And we founded it in partnership with the Publishers Association, because we wanted to make sure that we were working in tandem with the industry. That was great. Emma House and I did the conference along with brilliant content manager at London Book Fair, Orna O'Brien. So it was a really good, a very exhilarating thing to do at the time.
And I just want to say thank you for all the things you have done and the impact you've made to the publishing ecosystem.
Thank you. I'm not sure I have, but thank you very much.
You certainly have. And in your new venture, you will be a guest director of the Bologna Book Plus at the Bologna Fair.
Yes. Well, it's just the most delightful invitation that was issued, and one which I accepted with huge enthusiasm and alacrity, because Bologna Children's Book Fair is something I've admired for years. We all have, the entire industry. It admires the Bologna Children's Book Fair. It is the absolute hub of children's publishing. It's acclaimed, it's the premium event. It does huge amounts of work around illustration and talent and content. And it's been going for about 58 years, I think. They came to me and sort of said, what about brand extensions, etc.? And I think really the way to look at it is to say, if you take this wonderful brand and then how do you enhance it with actually holding a mirror up to it and ensuring that the rest of the world sees all of the great work that children's publishing does and where that fits within a wider general publishing remit. And so that's what Bologna Book Plus is in its most simple terms. It's a conference, a small exhibit, and one training course for selling, buying and selling rights in the children's market in a changing world, because of course the world becomes ever more fluid with very, very hungry digital content providers, television and or televisual content and audio content. So that's a very interesting time to be buying and selling rights. So that's one training course, which we're delighted to introduce this year at Bologna. And also we're going to be looking at self-publishing, which again is something that we did, you know, I've always been quite interested in. It is very democratic, self-publishing really. And so we'll be looking at that as well as this core point in the offering that is the one-day conference, where I think we will really be looking at everything that this terrible pandemic has brought to bear on accessibility. And I think we are going back to accessibility and inclusivity and equality, and to see just how we all help each other in making content accessible across the world, really, because education is the path to success for everybody. So, you know, COVID has really brought into sharp relief some of the difficulties in making content accessible. So that will be one strand of it, but it'll be a great conference. It'll be looking at innovation in content delivery. It'll be looking at sustainability. Publishers have been at the forefront of sustainability and the environment. And so, you know, what more can be done? How has interruption to the supply chain because of the pandemic forced the acceleration? Obviously, you know, the COVID catalyst is what I call it, but, you know, that's forced acceleration in digital delivery, in print on demand, in printing locally, etc. So there's lots of really interesting, which perhaps aren't the, as well as all of the content, of course, that's come out from people being locked down and amazing innovation around that as well. So that's Bologna Book Plus is pretty darned exciting. I should actually just mention here, another joy for me is that I have known the Bologna Children's Book Fair director, Elena Pazzoli, for many years in passing as friendly competition. And it's an absolute joy for me to be a colleague now. So that I'm enjoying very much indeed. Not to mention the food in Bologna, if we ever get there.
And I can tell from the enthusiasm in your voice that you're excited about this new venture. How would you measure the success of the book fair?
The Bologna Book Plus?
Yes.
I would hope that, I always hope that everyone always takes that we actually share, we share so many principles. So that, you know, children's publishing is one thing. General trade publishing is another sector. Education publishing is another sector. Then there's technology and everything that enables. And I think that what I would hope is that the conference, as I say, shines a spotlight on the fact that we all share many of the same challenges, and also just how innovative and flexible and nimble and agile and intelligent the industry is in its responses to things like pandemics, and the absolute determination to keep going with publishing books and to keep going with getting books into far-flung corners of the world. So I hope that the conference gives a platform to showcase some of the fantastic stuff that's been going on over the last year, 15 months, by the time we get to the conference, in really very, very difficult times.
Jax, you just mentioned a bit about the pandemic. We can see that almost all book fairs due to the pandemic must face and get used to a new normal state, which is being digital. So my question is, for the fairs that have hosted virtual events, how have they been received and how has the participation been like?
Well, I wouldn't be able to tell you about participation quantitatively, but you know, qualitatively, I can say that I know an awful lot of people who participated, for example, in the Frankfurt Book Fair digital offering last autumn. And looking at the rash of digital events that are being sort of presented as digital book fairs that different organisations planning on running in or around the London Book Fair slot, because the London Book Fair has been postponed as well to the end of June. I would say that people have responded extremely well to the digital options open to them. But I am proud to say as well that I also think that the number of people keeping to their appointments, wanting to do their own mini book fairs, etc., really does demonstrate the need for a book fair and the place of book fairs in the global industry calendars. Thank goodness for the technology, but my goodness, won't we all be pleased to see each other as well, and to be able to pass people in and just get those chance encounters, those chance conversations that you get by passing people in an aisle, and to be able to spot something on somebody's stand that you can then follow up with at a later date. I think the actual physical book fair is a thing of great. We're very sociable creatures in publishing. We like face-to-face sort of conversations and meetings.
Yes.
And we like being able to perhaps add new faces to digital address books, which you do get from those book fairs.
Yes. I think we are all missing the face-to-face human interaction these days. You mentioned that people are doing smaller book fairs because they miss being able to attend the more renowned book fairs. What are the attributes of a good book fair?
The interesting thing about book fairs is that whoever attends a book fair only ever really looks at it through the prism of what they want to get out of it, because that is human nature. So if you're buying and selling rights, what you do at book fairs is have back-to-back appointments. And, you know, every 30 minutes you are seeing the next person. And that goes on for 3 days, plus evenings of networking parties and dinners, et cetera, et cetera. So if you asked somebody that, you know, whose job it was to buy and sell rights, what do they want? They just want to make sure that everything works very efficiently, that they can get coffee, tea, water whenever they want. They can get their lunch. The queues aren't too bad for the bathrooms, all sorts of things, and that they can get to and from the venue very easily. That is one of the things that a book fair needs to deliver. If, on the other hand, you are a potential author and you want to come to a book fair, you don't want to be wandering around an event where you feel as though you don't know anyone and you have no home. So if you're a potential author, you're going to want to have a program that is possibly 2 or 3 days of learning and networking, and generally sort of feeling as though you have a place in that book fair. So that's where the absolute evolution around self-publishing has been absolutely fantastic, because that has allowed for all of that. And then if you're perhaps a new publisher from far-flung country who's travelled a long way to get to the London Book Fair, and you get to that book fair and you haven't actually prepared for it, what you're really going to want is some help with introductions. So, you know, there's a whole... And then, of course, you need the sort of fairy dust on every book fair, which of course is going back to the whole reason we're there, and that is the authors. You know, who are the people who are creating the content? So you have some fantastic authors in a book fair as well, who give, you know, keynote speeches and inspiration around that. You have all of the different sectors of publishing represented, you know, obviously in buying and selling, but also in sharing knowledge and sharing experiences through the show floor theatres. You have Never Ever Forget, the next generation, so publishing studies students. You know, basically, you want to ensure that you are not only capturing as many areas of the publishing industry ecosystem as possible, but also what you do with them. You want to make sure that you are giving people platforms, absolutely recognizing and celebrating their work. But first and foremost, really ensuring that they can do the business of publishing in a pleasant and inspiring environment.
It's so great hearing you sharing. So what's happening on the other side of the book fairs, because most of the time we go to book fairs as participants. We sort of know what's going on behind the curtain. So it's wonderful to listen to the stories from the other side.
I have to say that book fairs are always a reflection of the world we live in. So quite often the debate that is going on is, you know, it's quite often a political aspect, but through the lens of the creative industries. But book fairs are there to reflect what the industry does. And that's what makes them so exhilarating, because it's a fantastic industry.
It's really great. And well, actually having you as our guest for this episode has a special meaning to us, to our show, because you are the first female guest on our show. And we saw there was a picture online where you addressed a cocktail party in the Ivy Club, which is one of the august institutions you brought to the London Book Fair. I'm just wondering whether it is a coincidence that all the people standing around you happen to be men. So can you just talk about the situation of female publishers in this industry based on your observation and your experience?
Well, I mean, publishing has always been, it's a bit of a, you know, it's a bit, not a standing joke, but we all know that publishing is skews very, very positively towards women. There are an awful lot of women who work in publishing. I like to think that's because women are so clever. And quite possibly, but, you know, as with every industry, we have more than our fair share of men as well. And so possibly that photo of the Ivy Club was me. Perhaps we'd chosen a male author of the day that year, and perhaps that chap had a male literary agent, and perhaps the CEO of his publishing house was male. I'm pleased to see that on the latter front, that possibly women are taking those jobs a little more now than they used to. It's not necessarily a man's world, but I think that there has been quite a lot written about the fact that there was very much a glass ceiling for women, but there are some fantastic trailblazers in publishing who are women. And I hope that the ratio between the number of women in publishing and the number of women getting the top jobs in publishing houses will reach an equilibrium in the next decade. I think I was very lucky to find a working environment that I liked and loved, and never ever felt discriminated against because of my gender. So I think I've been enormously, enormously lucky from that point of view. And actually, I have to say, at the London Book Fair, I had an all-women team, and that wasn't necessarily, I mean, I don't, you know, I think that actually you need to have a very balanced team, but it was great fun. it was not by design.
Mm-hmm. Jax, thank you again for being our guest today, and you've shared quite so much with us already. Is there anything else that you'd like to share that maybe we haven't asked?
Well, I think because of Bologna, I should point out that the unbelievably famous and classic author Dante is going to be celebrating. He went to Bologna University as well. We're going to be celebrating the 700th anniversary of his death this year at Bologna. It's very nice to know where the famous spaghetti dish comes from, spaghetti bolognese.
That's really exciting.
And I've been feeling a bit blue about Brexit. So while Brexit is a complete anathema to me, I'm relieved that I read that I can spend, if I choose or if I'm invited to, 90 days out of every 180 in Italy, France and Europe without a visa. So that's cheered me up a bit in these dark times. There we go.
Well, I have to say the spaghetti thing sounds really thrilling. So now we are coming into the fun part of this interview, which we called signature questions. We have prepared three fun questions, and we would love to have your quick answers. Here comes the first one. The best way for you to get relaxed?
Pre-COVID, planning my next trip was always a great relaxation. But I have to say that I did a little tally. I still managed to get away quite a lot last year because my husband and I decided to do 6 weeks of lockdown in Provence in France. So that worked quite well. And but just for me, the best way for me to relax has always been displacement activity, because I have to make my brain concentrate on something else in order to relax. So clearly reading's top of that list, and other ones, and actually living abroad for a while, I managed to get to grips with ebooks and audiobooks, which I thought I never would, but now I'm quite a fan. And gardening and walking. I wish I could say running, but I think anyone who knows me thinks and saw me would know that that was exceptionally, possibly physically impossible. But I do like walking. And this week we've been eating the first broccoli that I ever grew. So gardening has been quite a good lockdown one as well, along with the rest of the world.
Could you share with us two people, dead or alive, that you would like to invite to dinner and why?
I did think about this long and hard, and it's very difficult because I love inviting people for dinner. And one of my favorite occupations, and possibly that is the other way that I relax, is to, I love having people for dinner, and I like sort of getting people together. So, introducing them to each other. At the moment, I am very pleased, as one of my hobby projects, again, this is another reason to have more flexibility in my working life, is to work on an author from the last century, Georgette Heyer, and it's the centenary of her, the publication of her first novel this year. And I don't know if any of you guys have caught Bridgerton on Netflix, but everyone sort of says that it's based on Georgette Heyer's novels. But those of us who read Georgette Heyer's novels know jolly well that she, her historical accuracy was much greater. But anyway, as I've always been passionate about Georgette Heyer, I managed to work with University College London on an academic conference they were running on Georgette Heyer. And as a result of that, University College London, which is UCL, their press is publishing a book in February of academic texts on Georgette Heyer. So I was thinking, well, in order to celebrate that, I'd like to invite Georgette Heyer for dinner. But unfortunately, she falls into the no longer with us category. But I would like Georgette Heyer, and the other person I would like to have round for dinner is Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters, because he is super cool and I think super nice. And I strongly suspect, his mum was a teacher, I think, and I strongly suspect he's a bit of a reader and probably believes in education as well. Whether or not I'd want Georgette Heyer and Dave Grohl at the same dinner party is something that I'd need to give some thought to. But the music would be good.
That sounds really wonderful. And the last question is, could you teach us one of your favorite phrases, either in English or other languages you are good at?
Well, I think one of my favorite phrases, and which everybody would tell me is either it's got to be fun or such fun, because I am a great believer in the fact that if you're spending so much of your time at work, you've darn well got to enjoy it. So I'm trying to get more serious as I get older, but it's not really working. And I think somebody, when I was away from my desk at some point at the London Book Fair, changed my screensaver to such fun. Because I've been lucky enough to always really, really enjoy my work. So such fun is one phrase, but really at the moment I would like, give us a vaccine that works. And I think you could put that afterwards with please God, Deo Valente, Si Dieu le veut, Inshallah, you know, all sorts of things. That seems to me possibly a more important phrase at the moment.
I do love this phrase you just shared. It's so simple, but it has lots of meaning in it. It's wonderful.
Yeah. So there we are.
And everyone, this is Jax Thomas. Jax, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much indeed for inviting me.
Thank you.
Get this episode delivered directly to you by subscribing to Cloptech Publishing Radio in whatever podcasting app you are listening to right now. Or you can have this podcast delivered to your inbox by subscribing to Cloudpack's newsletter. You can get the link from the episode notes. It's easy and free to sign up.
This episode was made possible by an international collaboration. Luna Tang and Dwayne Paris are co-hosts and producers. Nella Klopotek is publishing director. Marianne Belling, marketing coordinator. Bjorn Brewer, music designer. Angie Heinrich, art designer. Stefan Kaufer, editorial reviewer. George Logan, outreach liaison. And Mark Wintle, technology support.
We would like to hear from you. Tell us what's going on with your projects or business on Twitter, LinkedIn, or just email us at podcast@cloudpack.com.
This is Cloudpack Publishing Radio. I'm Dwayne Paris.
I'm Luna Tang.
Thank you so much for listening.